Barbarella is basically the roasted corn.
Are you saying that Barbarella is the uncooked noodles?
I love you, and I say this with all of that in my heart, but f*** you. You're not wrong. And it turns out that Pygar is the green onion. And Barbarella is holding the hookah wand, and she's like, I don't know. And then the concierge walks in.
Yeah. And then he escorts her. Actually, we don't see her. He catches her and everything, but we get this transition.
Well, he says, now it's my turn to have some fun.
Yeah. And that's when we get the transition, and it's like this wild sheet music instead of regular circles for notes. You get triangles and squares. Ooh.
Welcome to Naomi's number 6 of more interesting ways to die. I'll title this one, The Organ Grinder.
I titled it Piano of Death. No? Orgasm? Sorry, gave it away. Yeah, so basically she's just you hear this music playing and everything, and there's this piano keyboard, and Barbarella is underneath these, if you've ever looked inside a piano, you know that there are these, the strings in a piano get thumped with the keys. And so that's kind of what it looks like if you're ever looking inside a piano and someone's doing that stroll across the keys and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's this wavy motion, and it's got these boards that are thumping on her and everything.
He's explaining evil scientist style that he's been perfecting this machine. I've seen this movie a dozen times, and I don't know if I've ever noticed the pile of dead women to the side, mm-hmm. but I did today.
Yeah.
Made me sad.
Yeah.
So he's I'm going to bring you to exquisite pleasure. And then I love it when villains are I will bring you to the height of ecstasy, and then I shall kill you. And so he's just I'm going to make you feel so good, and then I will kill you. Mm-hmm. And then he starts to play this keyboard with this apparently masterful music. And what's the song they play in the, it's a overture of some kind, in the preview. It's all it's a really famous one.
Ode to Joy.
Yeah.
Ode to Joy.
Except it's not that in this scene. It's just he's like, I know how I'm gonna bring you exquisite pleasure and then death. Dun 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 dun.
So there was a killer piano in the last one, and there's a killer piano in this one.
Yeah, we go with themes.
Yeah, everything is stitched together.
Yes. So he gives it all he's got. She's like, oh, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. And then he's all getting into it. His hair is shaking all over. And she's like, oh. She falls into near unconsciousness. So she mm-hmm. becomes very sweaty in a way that does not look bad on her, right? She did tapes, workout tapes back in the 80s, right? Mm-hmm. She knows how to look good when she's a little sweaty.
Yeah.
And he plays and he plays and he plays until the thing, and her clothes shoot out.
Yeah.
As she's slowly getting sex machined. If only 1968 knew what the internet was going to bring, right? So then it all starts to smoke, and then it literally bursts into flames. But he's so focused on the music, he looks up when it's fully engulfed in flames, and he's like, oh, no, you, I forget all the words he uses, but he's like, you slut, you harlot, you absolute debaucherous thing. Now I'm really going to kill you.
Basically, this is a piano that brings women to orgasm so hard that they die. But Barbarella doesn't do this. In fact, the opposite happens to his piano of death, because Barbarella kills the piano of death.
Yeah. I mean, I could come up with metaphors, but they're all pretty telling.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when your toy is cheap, it breaks. That's all I'm trying to say. And it happens to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So he is like, I'm going to go get some stuff to hurt you with. He doesn't say it like that. And he walks past, all of her clothes that have shot to the ground, including the wristlet that was her Duran Duran detector. Mm-hmm. And it goes off, and she goes, Duran Duran. And he's all like, Ah, you found me out, did you? Mm-hmm. You recognized me, don't you? Didn't you? She goes, you're supposed to be 25. How was I just supposed to recognize you? Because she'd only been shown a picture from like 5 years ago when he was 20, but he had a space helmet on. And also, he was supposed to be a young man. She's like, how was I supposed to recognize you? You were only supposed to be 25 years old. And he like shakes up and he's like, I am 25 years old. Except he's clearly 45 or 50 years old.
Right. And his whole spiel is that the Matmos goes ahead and it gives everything. And here's the thing about the Matmos. It is like it like feeds off of negativity. And so you have to like constantly feed that or else it like destroys you.
Just remember, children, Matmos, not even once.
Yeah. It's the life bringer, but also the death bringer. But also over time, it makes you evil. Mm-hmm. I don't know. She's like, hey, can you hand me a garment? And like, he like hands her this green thing that she shimmies into.
During this entire exposition on his part, she's just like, can you please hand me something to put on? And he accommodates. And she's like, can you please hand me the shoes? And he accommodates. Meanwhile, he's like, I'm going to kill you and I'm going to kill the Black Queen, which is the great tyrant. And then I'll probably go to Earth and take over Earth as well.
He's like, but I mean, he goes, he's like, I just have to find a way to get to her when she's most vulnerable. This is when she hops out of the machine, puts her hands on her hips and goes, I know how to enter the Chamber of Dreams. All of Peter Pan. Yeah. She's just perky as shit. But this outfit she's wearing, it is a green leotard with sequins at the top, going down to chandelier tiles draped across the bottom. It is emerald green. It is my favorite outfit of all of her outfits. And that is the picture of Jane Fonda that was on the back of my toilet for years.
All right.
She also has this gun, right, in the picture.
In the picture, she has the missile launcher, but that's the one that she loses when she's, or at least, I think we actually see somebody carrying one in the final destruction scene. So maybe she had a couple of them, but it's an interesting gun. It's a hand that holds the arm, which is where you'd brace the butt of, maybe, I mean, you brace a gun on your shoulder, but it has a hand, so it looks like it's supposed to grab your arm, so you'd hold it more easily. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. That green dress may have inspired every Pinterest board I made that was like, green dress of my dreams.
When we had two bathrooms, we had a green bathroom and there were a couple of different green things.
Oh, yes. There's also a Marilyn Monroe ensemble from some Western she did that was green. I was collecting famous women in green dresses for a while. I have weird tastes. I'm not ashamed.
I don't know when she took off the metallic dress. Was that right before she hops in to the machine?
Which metallic dress?
The one that's kind of like chainmail.
She changes out of that into the secret uniform.
Okay. Well, the film's costumes influenced Jean-Paul Gaultier's designs in The Fifth Element. And Gaultier noted Paco Rabanne's metallic dress that was worn by Fonda.
Oh, it totally looks like Lulu's dress, outfit, the rubber band outfit, except she didn't have chainmail.
Right.
Cool. I'm not mad.
So Duran Duran escorts or like has this gun against Barbarella and he's like, go ahead and move. And so he's pretty much forcing her to the Chamber of Dreams.
I don't think the gun is out yet. Because she thinks she's teaming up with him right now.
Oh, okay.
So he leads her to the Chamber of, I want to call it the Chamber of Secrets. The Chamber of Dreams. And she there pulls it. He's like, the key, where's the key? She pulls it out of her shirt over her head. And she's like, where's the keyhole? Yeah. Right? And that's when he struggles with her, grabs it from her hand because it's invisible. Actually, that was a plot point too, by the way. He was just like, oh, you have the key. And she's like, yeah. And he's like, what does it look like? She goes, well, it's invisible. He goes, you really do have the key. Mm-hmm. All right. So then he takes the key by force from her, throws it to the ground, right? Well, they tussle. It falls to the ground or it gets thrown. He shoves her forward.
That opens the door.
Throwing it into the ground opens the door. And then he reaches inside to another pillow box and he feels around. And then you hear a clink as he finds the key. He steps back out, throws the key down. And now she's locked in the Chamber of Dreams with the evil tyrant, the great tyrant.
Right.
She's taking a little nap. She don't hear nothing.
Mm-hmm. And so Barbarella starts going through the Chamber of Dreams and she sees a projection or
He also exit speeches on her too, by the way. Mm-hmm. He's all like, now you will be trapped here and the Matmos will take you all.
And so as Barbarella is going through it, she sees that the great tyrant is dreaming of Pygar.
Yes. He goes, an angel can't make love. An angel is love. And that's like really convenient for plot.
Mm-hmm. And then you get this trippy sequence of, like, again, doing that whole, like, you know, light behind the oil.
Okay, the way they did it in Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test is they would get one of those old school projectors like we all had to experience. Children of the applauders, applauder children, a projector is a box with a light bulb in it and a huge lens. And then above it is a lens that would catch the light, project it, angle it, and then you could shoot it at the wall. But if you put, like, say, opaque oil on it, or water, you could swirl it around or turn it or twist it or shake it or whatever, and it would create all these patterns. And people on a lot of LSD thought it was really cool, except we're not on LSD, and the director used this too much.
Yeah. And so she's like walking through this dream chamber, mm-hmm. chamber of dreams, trying to find the queen and everything.
Harry Potter steps out and is just like, oh, I see that you wish you had your parents still. Samesies.
Okay.
Chamber of Secrets, yeah. whatever.
And so when she gets to the Great Tyrant, she wakes her up and pretty much tells her, look, your concierge is trying to take over your throne and everything.
Yeah, she confirms that the key is gone and then, like, pulls pillows off of her bed, which is, like, happens a couple times mm-hmm. in this whole film, and is like, oh, I've got monitors all over the kingdom. I can see anywhere.
Yeah, and so when they look in on the throne room, they see that the concierge, Duran Duran, is pretty much about to get crowned king, but then someone comes in and says, my liege, there's a revolution happening, and everybody in the labyrinth is revolting.
The rebels end up actually doing really well with the weapons that mm-hmm. they've confiscated from Barbarella's ship, mm-hmm. but... And the reason why the government, the Earth government, wants Duran Duran / concierge back so bad is because he is the inventor of the positronic ray.
Yeah.
Which is mentioned several times throughout the film, except I only wrote it down just now in my notes.
Right.
Positronic ray. He's like, all right, I got some killing to do. So he heads off to his little war room.
Right. And there was this funny moment where we see the rebels are, you know, doing really well. And then the messenger comes in and says, everything is destroyed. And he's like, wonderful. The rebels have been defeated. I was like, no, all of our stuff has been destroyed. And he's just like, fake news.
Yeah, he's like, he's trying to give this impression that he's still in charge. He makes it to the positronic ray gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he takes out Professor Ping, and then he takes out Dildor.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad because they're doing really well. They don't seem to suffer, but they blink static yeah. out of existence, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're just gone.
Yeah.
And Barbarella has to watch it all.
Yeah, because the queen has a one-way mirror. No, sorry, that
monitor,
was...
Monitor, she calls
yeah.
it.
Yeah, so she can see everything that goes on in her kingdom, but nobody can look in.
Which brings us to number 7 of more interesting ways to die.
Yes.
Free the Mathmos!
Yeah, and that was also, like, something that the tyrant said, is that, oh, no, you've locked me in here, and it has been said that if I am in my chamber with someone else, then the Mathmos will come and get me.
Yeah, it's like, behold, what's the word I'm thinking of? Told is not it.
Prophecy?
It's prophecy. It's yeah. been prophesied.
Yeah.
Which, okay, whatever.
Foretold.
Thank you.
Foretold.
It's foretold.
She was like, all is lost. This is an apocalypse.
Yeah. She's bringing about the apocalypse to mm-hmm. just give one last middle finger to he who would overthrow her, yeah. right? So she toggles all of these beautiful, like, crystal wands, and then she, like, throws herself on the bed to write out the Mathmos. I've heard it both ways.
Yeah.
Mathmos. And then Barbarella throws herself on the bed too. And then all of a sudden this egg, this plastic egg comes over them.
So the tyrant mentions, for whatever reason, the Mathmos isn't hurting them. And in my notes, I wrote down, even the vat that feeds off negativity can't help but love Barbarella. Because it's like she's so innocent and pure that it can't hurt her. It can't destroy her because it, negative as it is, loves her so much.
The Great Tyrant says it another way. She mm-hmm. says that it finds you undigestible.
Oh, really? Okay.
So Barbarella is basically the roasted corn.
Are you saying that Barbarella is the uncooked noodles?
I love you and I say this with all of that in my heart, but fuck you. You're not wrong. And it turns out that Pygar is the green onion. Okay, because what happens is it spits them up. It shoots to Duran Duran getting boiled alive and fire and sparks and all that. He never gets out of his chair, by the way. And that sounds like the best acting gig. If I could just sit or lay down and be like, I would love that. That sounds like a good job. And so they end up on this little island at the top of everything that has melted down, and they're surrounded by like puddles of stuff. The great tyrant goes, I guess our little friend, Barbara's like, Pygar, laying on this little island. And she goes, I guess the Mathmos thought that you were as undigestible as she was, right? So then he's unconscious, pops right up, and she's like, Pygar, can you get us out of here? Can you fly me out of here, really? Fly. She says us, but she means she and him. And he's all like, okay, yeah.
Is this the part where she, like, flaps his wings to try and resuscitate
him? The CPR part is this. I call it whoosh, whoosh, CPR because...
Heavy on the air quotes.
The great tyrant's like, give him mouth to mouth. And she's like, I have a better idea. And, like pumps his wings like he was a water pipe, I guess. Mm. And then he wakes up, perks up, is like, yeah, I can fly us out of here. And by us, he meant all three of them, but she thought it was just them two. And she's like, why did you save her? And he's all like, angels have no memory. The innocence bubble.
Yeah.
Angels have no memory.
And then music keeps going, but with no credits. Like,
it's the last theme of the song is bad, admittedly so. It is like, angels have no memory, women cry and children want stuff and men are dudes and things, but angels have no memory.
Pygar flies off with Barbarella and the great tyrant.
Under each of his arms.
Yeah, and Barbarella's like, why did you save her after she tried to kill you? And he was like, angels have no memory.
Right.
Did he just say he has a bird brain?
Yeah. He's like, I'm a sex idiot who doesn't mind taking my would-be rapist out of the city of her own destruction.
It would have been better if he had said something like along the lines of forgiveness. But I mean, I guess the Jesus allegory was just like too ham-fisted in, and that would have just made like too much sense.
Yeah, or something just like away from such excesses of evil, even this one can have redemption.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, so then, like, we have the oil bubble picture credits as, like, and then it fades to black, and then there's no other credits, and the song just keeps going for, like, two more minutes.
Yeah.
I speculate that's just leaving the theater music, mm-hmm. so that maybe it sticks in your head. Maybe you buy the soundtrack.
Mm.
I wouldn't.
I don't know.
I love this movie, and I wouldn't buy the soundtrack.
But that's the end of the movie! Yay!
Oh, wait, that's not the part we have other stuff to do.
Yeah, I'm just saying, yay, it's the end of the movie.
I do wish there was more of an ending.
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to see what happened. There's no finishing flourish. It is an I watched a TikTok about this, and somebody who's musically inclined can tell me. It's an unresolved note, right? Jen nods. Jen knows about music.
Yeah,
you know about it. You get it? Okay,
yeah.
That's how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I forget if you played it. You played an instrument, right?
Like I played the cello.
Cello.
It's like if you just went dun dun,
yeah,
and that's the end.
Yeah,
dun dun, Duran Duran.
Right.
You got some Sean facts for me, Jen?
I do indeed. I saved a few for our end here. Would you like to know some other Barbarellas?
Yeah.
Dutch all-female dance pop trio from the Netherlands. That's a Barbarella. An Irish pop duo consisting of twins Adele and Keavy Lynch, born 15th of December 1979, former members of pop girl group Bewitched. That's a Barbarella group. The only official single released from Scott Whelan's former lead singer of Stone Temple Pilots' 1998 debut album 12 Bar Blues, an annual music festival held in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic since 2011 by Presidente Beer, a nightclub in Portland, Oregon, and the designation of the first German hybrid rocket developed under the management of R. Schmucker.
You could take me to a bar called Barbarella?
A nightclub, yeah, in Portland. Old Town Chinatown. It was also the first German hybrid rocket in the 70s. And we have one more. Brigitte Bardot and Sophia Loren turned down the title role of Barbarella. Bardot didn't want to play a sexual role, and Loren was pregnant at the time.
That would have made it way funnier. Like, I know I got a weird sense of humor, but it would have been, like, super funny if she had been, if I only take pills to diddle, how did I do this?
So, are we ready for our shocked and applaud moments?
So, applauders, we're not quite done yet, because we here at Shocked and Applaud want to commend and condemn.
It's true. If you just wanted the plot, you could have just gone on to the internet and found out the plot or rented the movie and watched it. You want to know what we think of the movie.
And I'm so sorry about whatever it is that drove you to that, but we're here to share. Who has a really strong... I think we did it reverse order. I think we did...
You did... you're shocked and applaud and then move to the next person.
Okay. I want to end on a positive because I picked this movie. Yeah. And I want to hear good things at the end. So let's start with her. Let's do a round of shocked. Who thinks they have a nice, strong shocked?
Well, I'll go ahead and go.
Okay.
It's not my first one. This is the one that I came up with while we were doing the podcast. So it's just the lost comedy potential of this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, the tone feels all over the place. And I feel like if they just stuck with the comedy, I would have liked it a lot more. And like, there were some like real funny moments.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the, like, in the labyrinth, everybody's taking themselves so seriously.
Yeah.
And I think if they had just taken themselves less seriously in that, maybe had a little bit more coherence with the scenes and how they flow together, I think it would have been a lot stronger of a film.
Yeah. I feel like that is. And my shocked is not too dissimilar. I mean, I already basically gave it away like two parts ago, but I have a problem with the and thens left no opportunity for anyone to have a character arc. There is no evolution of character. There's no Bechdel-Myers test passing. Mm-hmm. There's just, and then this happened, right? So she met this guy and they hooked up, and then she had to go to the city, so she had to leave. And then then she was in the city and she got caught. And then she was in this labyrinth city, Pygar. No. It's just Tommy guns at you, right? With very little room. There's no room. There's no, I get it. And I don't necessarily always need to be there to be a character arc, but it would have given us, as we've said in the past, like room to breathe, room to like look around and to like figure out if you even like this character or if is Duran, I mean, like, would you have noticed Duran was the guy if it wasn't for that big reveal? Like, no.
Well, and there was also like the only photo of Duran Duran was in a group with other people, and they don't necessarily point him out.
They do. There's literally an arrow.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not.
He's the only one with the space helmet on, but also there's like an orange arrow on the photo. It doesn't matter. You can't barely even see his face. That's the
right.
Whole point. He's supposed to be a 25-year-old dude, which I never caught until like today when he's just like, I'm 25 years old. I'm like, oh, that's a gag.
Yeah.
I get it now.
Yeah.
Because even I, watching this film, forget that it's a gag, that there are tons of gags that I just don't catch. And maybe part of it is just that we're removed from 1968 humor.
Mm-hmm.
Why they can call her a naked savage just because she's naked and has guns, and why he can be like, you've turned this into a bunch of except he's talking about how it's burning up.
Yeah.
And that word does not.
It doesn't flow with what we say now.
We just fallen out of favor in use with people who give a about other people.
Mm-hmm.
Jen, do you have a shocked moment?
I don't know if I have a shocked moment per se.
A shocked concept then.
Yeah, I really can't watch this one multiple times. This isn't a repeat viewing kind of deal. It feels like I can watch it, it seems like, once a decade and be okay with the amount that I'm seeing it. There is Duran Duran is a MacGuffin. It's just you're out. She's out there looking for this thing, this person throughout the entire movie. And then when it's handed to you, it's not like this big payoff. It's just this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a MacGuffin. And that works a lot in Hollywood. That's why it gets handed to us so often. On top of it just being a lot of, and then this happened, the pacing in the middle of some scenes seems just really off. When she's ice skating, basically, with the twins, that seems like it goes on for...
Jen, be fair, it is skiing.
It is skiing. And, I mean, she does at that point have... a concussion. She does have a concussion at that point, which I think they could have played up. You know, it never seemed to be like this, oh, I've got this head injury.
She's injured multiple times to the point of drawing blood, and it never sticks.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if this is an actual tangible thing, but how long, what do you think the duration is? Okay, if you skip like the 150 hours she slept, right, to go from given the mission to flying away with in Pygar's arms, right? What? How long? How do you like? How long do you think from the time she gets hoodwinked by the children? How long? How what is the timeline on this?
Less than 2 days, maybe like less than a day.
Right, right, right. I mean, like the only timestamp mentioned is when Dildor says our plan will commence at 1600 hours, and I think he might give her like an hour. I think,
right, but she's knocked out like several times.
She has brain injury, even if she's flight mistress level 5. I don't know. Sorry. Talking about pacing, I don't know what the time is. I don't really play. I mean, I've talked about it a couple times on the podcast, but I really don't pay hard attention to. I've very much got like the Shining pacing in my head when you're like, oh, it's Thursday. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Saturday. I'm like, oh, great. There has been a progression of time. There's room between these. Mm-hmm. There's no room between anything. And I think it betrays the pacing, like you were saying.
Right. I would watch Santa Claus versus the Martians more often than I would watch this movie.
Jen, you want to, let's reverse order. Why don't you give me your...
What about your shocked moment or your...
Oh, I did. I did. Mine is the and-thens left.
Oh, okay.
Left no room for character development.
Okay.
But why don't we reverse order and we'll end on... Okay, so yeah, so Jen, applaud, I applaud. We land on your applaud.
Okay.
Just as a final thorn in... Or I can go last. That's fine, too.
No. I like my applaud moment.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, Jen, hit it.
Wow. I think for me, it's the costume design.
Good choice.
And I'm not saying that they're like... It's not that they held up over time, but I think that for their time, it was ahead of its time. It's very mod and very... Very French influenced, it feels like, especially since this is a French comic.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree with you on that. That's why it held up for what's his face for Fifth Element.
Luc Besson.
Yeah, that jerk.
So
he at least had good taste in costuming, and it obviously had something to do with this.
And I would say that on top of it, sort of being, you know, the costumes were really great. This movie has influenced sci-fi beyond any of us can really know for sure.
Yeah.
There is it doesn't just influence sci-fi too. There was one more point in here from Sean. It's especially the initial zero gravity striptease sequence. It was an inspiration for Kylie Minogue's Put Yourself in My Place and Ariana Grande's Break Free. So that Break Free one is from 2014 and Minogue's is from 1994. So it's still catching the attention of artists today, and they're repurposing a lot of the themes.
Let me tell you why I think that is. Do you want me to tell you?
Do we just want to talk? Is it just about a woman taking her sexuality, like taking ownership of her sexuality?
No, and I don't appreciate you stepping on my applaud point.
Well, it's too bad that this one opportunity where I step on you has happened. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Glad to have permission. Okay, so tell me if this strikes a chord with you. The reason why this movie has influenced so many different other spin-offs of sci-fi might be similar to the way that maybe Scream really helped influence the new age of, you know, the late 1990s into the early 2000s, exceptionally expanding after that. Because a lot of times the thing that gets you safely introduced to a genre that welcomes you in to the absurdity is a comedic rendition of it. Like when Blazing Saddles came out, right? I forget the year, but it was decades and decades ago, right? It was before I think even my dad got into being a cowboy, but like that kind of humor, making it funny, meaning like, we don't know why this makes sense either. Come along to the absurdity, like welcomes in a younger or at least less experienced audience. And so it's much easier to be like, oh, you want to get into sci-fi? You should try. And then the suggestion usually is something that has stronger comedic notes. You're not like, hey, you want to get into sci-fi? Why don't you watch First Contact? Right? You know, like you want to get into horror? You should totally watch that freaking Tooth Fairy one that one chick was in. You know, you want to get into horror? You should watch Insidious, right? You're more inclined to offer something that gives you a little bit of humor so that if it's stressing you out, you have a break, or if you feel like, oh, I'll never understand this, the genre itself is admitting that there are lots of things that don't make sense until you are engrossed.
For sure. I think that humor, as long as it's interpreted inside the same, the right culture and the right audience, it can bring them in. I think that Fifth Element has some pretty good notes of that. The idea that, you know, hundreds of years in the future, we're going to have like a McDonald's that is pretty much exactly how we have McDonald's now, but in space.
Yeah.
It's some of that absurdity does kind of help, as you said, that if we tell you that we don't know what we're doing either, then you don't have to feel like you have to figure everything out. I think that there are enough notes in this movie to push science fiction in that direction, to see that influence even in like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Which is like even more recently like a funny accepting on two different levels. It accepts people into the comic universe and it accepts people into the sci-fi universe. And so that's like a dual draw. It's no wonder that it was so incredibly successful. You know, you feel that? You contrary feelings about that? I mean,
so are you saying that Barbarella, because of the comedy elements, is like a gateway?
Yeah.
Okay.
I love a gateway. One of my favorite subreddits is The Gates Are Open.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Yeah, come on in, join us. We're always better as a community.
Right. Like I could see there's a level of camp in this movie. And I think it kind of goes into my shocked moment where it's like, oh, this is supposed to be a campy movie, but they don't go far enough.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I can see what you're saying about that.
But it's still one of those things where it's like, oh, you want to kind of get into, you know, campy drama. You know, this would be something that you could not campy drama, campy sci-fi, especially from like the 60s and 70s, which I think was kind of right with it. Like this was before Phantom of the Paradise. So it's one of those movies where I could see this being a nice little gateway. So
Jen, my applaud moment is surprisingly sex positive. Minus the two, there are two scenes. Okay, there are two scenes that are icky in terms of consent. The organ grinder scene and the Pygar not giving consent to the great dictator. Nope.
Great tyrant.
The great tyrant. Like those two scenes are rapey and gross.
Well, they border on it, and it's like dubious consent because she's not emphatically about it.
Mm-hmm.
But at no point does she say no.
Let me out of here, whatever. But like,
right.
she is put in a sexual situation without
enthusiastic consent,
which is
same
what
with Pygar.
Yeah. Well, and Pygar, now to the tyrant's credit, he's all like, I don't want to. And she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, okay, well, then you can die.
Yeah.
Which, hey, maybe like,
I mean, maybe not like put death versus having sex with me on the table.
Yeah. So, okay, those two things, if we can chuck those out the window or at least show that those two people are evil.
Mm-hmm.
Then I don't hate the consent and stuff, the sexy parts of this film. Like when you were reading Sean facts and it was like, this is exemplary of the sexual revolution, right? I'm like, well, yeah. And I feel like I come from a more repressed place than this movie does. And I shouldn't. It came out a couple decades before I did. Like, whatever. But I mean, like, I don't know what happened that like brought us to be more close to the chest about that kind of thing. But the fact that she was like, I'm sexy and I know it. You know?
Yeah.
I like that. I admire that about her, that she doesn't make assumptions. In the first scene where she's like, I'd like to get it on. And she's like, okay, I've got the pills to do that. And he's like, no, I want to get it on with your body and my body. And she was like the poor people do?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, it's great. And she's like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
This was her choice.
Yeah.
She was able to pivot. She was able to make accommodations. She found something that she liked. She really liked because she was emotionally available and was communicating openly with her partner. Like,
yeah,
I think it's accidental, but it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Bechdel-Myers pass.
Where?
Because of her conversation in the dream room.
It was all about Duran Duran and how he's locked them in there.
Duran Duran was mentioned in the Chamber of Dreams. I mean, like,
the closest scene that comes to it is you're the wench, the one-eyed wench. I'm the one-eyed wench, but
right.
It's still kind of like,
like I would think that the closest scene would be between Barbarella and the twin girls.
But they're the, oh, and they do name the girls.
Mm-hmm. later.
Okay, I'll give it a pass. I'm not a Bechdel-Myers expert, but I think Lydia got it a pass.
Yeah.
Hey, how about this? Remake directed by a woman.
Yeah. Ooh. You could have Duran Duran being the person that she has to see in order to like maybe it's the great tyrant who has this weapon and Barbarella is being sent in and her contact is Duran Duran. And so it's less about like Duran Duran was the one who, you know,
it would make more sense if Dildor was Duran Duran, I think, yeah. Overall.
Right. And then she could have gone in there and maybe there was a trap or something. Mm. There was safety, something that the queen put in place or some way. You could rework it very easily, mm-hmm. to be a to pass the Bechdel-Myers test.
Yeah, that's not really hard to pass the Bechdel-Myers. We just continuously fail. Mm-hmm. Lydia, what's your shocked moment?
Oh, my applaud moment?
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm here. It's just been hours. Yeah. What's your applaud moment?
My applaud moment is the tyrant's dialogue. It's delightful and it's campy and it's everything that I wanted this movie to be.
The way, oh yes, the yeah. pretty.
The pretty, and also, and he escaped the labyrinth, crime!
Yes.
It's so great. Yeah.
Do you remember the guy from Parks and Recs, Fred Armisen, his character, his dictator character, who's just like, in my country, you undercook chicken, to jail. You overcook fish, straight to jail. You know, like that part? You know what I'm talking about? That's a fantastic part. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything she says.
Yeah.
And the dubbing on her doesn't suck.
No.
It sucks on everyone else. But I want to talk like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I should take elocution lessons so that I can sound like the great tyrant.
Mm-hmm. I'm all for that.
Barbarella, pretty. The angel. Mm-hmm. You can't be in my chamber, sir.
I'm pretty sure you've called me pretty in the past because of this movie.
You are pretty, though.
Thank you.
I've also called children that just because it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the word pretty is like...
Right.
I don't think it has connotations that are like nookie or anything like that. So I feel like you should be able to call, and we should degender mm-hmm. calling things pretty and handsome. I would love to be a handsome woman. I love pretty people. You guys.
You made it through the entire month of November, all the way through Thanksgiving with your family.
If you're going to fight about anything, fight about this movie.
Turn to your parent and say, hey, if they were around in 1968, did you see this in the theater? No? Did you ever watch it afterwards? No? Do you want to sit next to each other and only see boobs 9 times-ish?
Yeah.
Depending on how you count them?
Mm-hmm.
My mom refused to watch this movie.
No, she watched it with me.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
She I was like, I watched it. And then she came home from a dinner date with one of her girlfriends.
Uh-huh.
And then she sat down with me and I was so drunk. I think I took all of the hard liquor that you use in a Long Island,
uh-huh.
and then just added a Mike's with it.
Okay.
It was wonderful. I mean, I don't think I should ever do that again.
No.
But still, it was a lovely, it was a booze-filled evening.
Yeah. Yep. And apparently more enjoyable then than it was today.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I really shouldn't, recording the podcast drunk. So.
Yeah, well, we've succeeded at that several times now. But hey, I hope that you guys can get through your holidays without relying on Substance. Mm-hmm. I hope that you know that you're very good looking. And as Barbarella said that she's average for an earth woman, you're average for an earth person too.
Yes.
Very good looking. So I think other than the bumper at the end that Jen's going to put in, we want to thank our researcher, Sean, mm-hmm. His lovely spouse, Madeline.
We want to thank the people at Frolic Media. For networking with us, and they're just a great website of podcasts and just articles and everything.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for Podchaser finding us, having us be searchable
mm-hmm.
on a bigger platform, which is fantastic.
Until next time, this is Jen McQuaid.
This is Naomi McQuaid,
and this is Lydia Malcolm,
and this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
You've reached the conclusion of November 2021's review of 1968's Barbarella, Applauder. Thank you for joining us for our walkthrough of this 60s camp sci-fi comedy. Looking for more female-led podcast friends of ours to expand your library? Bigfoot for Breakfast has over 10 years' experience researching mysterious circumstances within the paranormal community. And Lady Justice True Crime is a UK-based true crime podcast that takes a deep dive into fascinating and little-known cases, with new episodes every 2 weeks. Check out links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and inventor of Duran Duran's age-defying moisturizer, Jen. Are things getting a little old and you wish we'd have something new to bring you? Next week, we'll be releasing our Shocked Talk episode of The 13th Warrior with Sean and Madeline. We can't wait to bring you their hot takes as the podcast after show you never knew you never needed. We'll be back with another brand new episode for your earholes starting on December 14th, and it's a classic from Lydia's childhood that she can't wait to share with you. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay! Ba 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 Barbarella.
Ba 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 Barbarella. She diddles fell.